Well, Leviticus 23 is a list of the, we can probably call them holidays, the festivals or the feast days, however you want to describe it, that were woven into the calendar of ancient Israel. And more importantly than just to have a day to celebrate, these were worship points. These were teaching points. These were spiritual checkup points along the way, so that throughout their calendar, there would be moments where they would draw apart from everything else and focus upon God's place in their life and focus upon God's provision in their life and in the world. And also something that if you really dig down into the depths of Leviticus 23, and you really kind of take these feasts out and break them apart, many of them, probably all of them to some degree, some it's a little clearer to see, are wonderful depictions of what God ultimately was going to do in the person and the work of the Messiah, the Lord Jesus Christ. There's much material there. There's symbolisms there. So I've really sort of been off and on thinking about this for a couple years. I'd like to do a little study to go through Leviticus 23 and trying to figure out how to sequence it and so forth. So I thought we'd just plunge in, knowing that the Wednesday crowd are brave souls and also are astute Bible students and can help me along the way. But I thought we might just take a look at these. And I want to look at them more than just giving you a list of here's what happened when. But I want to get to what I think God's intention was, and that was to help them see something very significant about the relationship with the Lord. And even though we may be predominantly, maybe exclusively non-Jewish, and even though these are not observances that we as New Testament believers practice or keep as part of our calendar, the same lessons that he wanted to communicate to Israel through their calendar are the same messages he wants to communicate to us. And there is a richness to this material and a richness to their life. Unfortunately, I guess I should be very honest and throw this into the mix. Unfortunately, Israel was not a faithful people. If you study the Old Testament, you know that God described them with his own lips. He said they are a stiff-necked people. They did not want to be bowed. They could not be, their wills could not be bent. Their hearts could not be molded into a fashion that would be compliant in the hands of God. And one of the things I think you could say very truthfully is this, that I think they even got sloppy on the observances of these built-in checkpoints. And I think there's an overarching lesson for all of us, and we'll kind of see this as we go through, that we need to just always be on guard that we would ever be tempted or give into temptation to grow sloppy in our observances in our spiritual lives. And it might be different. It might be different patterns, different symbols, different activities, different understandings. But nonetheless, let's don't be sloppy. Because God wants to just have this relationship that we have with him woven through the fabric of all that we are. So that's kind of where we're going. I'll just do a quick overview through the chapter, and then we'll look at our section for tonight, just so you kind of see where we're going. And I would encourage you, by the way, if you have time, you might want to, after we're done, read ahead. We're just going to look at the first three verses tonight in any detail. But maybe read through this, and maybe if you have access to a Bible dictionary or some online tools, you might do that. Yes, I see that hand. Am I going to talk about just days? Yeah, that's where we're going to start. Yeah, you're way, as normal, you're way ahead of me. So thank you for that. Yeah, we're going to come back to that. Actually, verse 1 through 3 talks about the weekly Sabbath, the Lord's Day, as we would call, at least that's what our practice, not really a Sabbath practice, but we'll come back to that. Then verses 4 through 8 talk about the Passover, and which was accompanied with and kind of interwoven with the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Okay, and as we are coming up now to soon to be April, and as we think about the observance of Easter coming up, the Lord's resurrection, we probably should say it that way, we're in that time frame because, remember, it was the Passover celebration was what externally brought Jesus to Jerusalem, although we know he came with a different mission in mind. And then in verses 9 through 14, you have the festival of first fruits. This was time to be at the beginning of the barley harvest. So it was the very first crops of the new year that would come in, the first return on their labor and investment in an agricultural economy. And there was a celebration to remind them of God's part in providing and how they would honor God in that way. Verses 15 all the way through 22 is describing the Feast of Pentecost. And it occurred 50 days after the Passover first fruits time period. And the description is there. Verses 23 through 25, it's the Feast of Trumpets. Okay? And then verses 26 all the way down through 32 is the Day of Atonement, which is without doubt the most solemn, reverent moment day in Israel's history. In fact, when we get there, we'll look at some other a little more fuller description than what even Leviticus 23 gives us about that. And then finally, verses 33 and following tell us about the Feast of Tabernacles. And if you notice, like in verse 34, speak to the children of Israel, saying the 15th day of this seventh month. So it's spelled out on their calendar what day it's to be celebrated, and these are sprinkled throughout the year. When we get started with the feast at some later point, I've been looking for a good chart that I could share with you that'll show them all in one swoop. I almost printed one today, but I think we can find one that maybe would be a little clearer and a little easier to understand. So we'll get that in your hands. But verses 1 through 3, let's read them. And the Lord spake to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, The feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. These are my feasts. Let's stop and just define what convocations means. It simply means a meeting or a gathering. The people are to come together, to be together at this point. And they were to come together where the house of God was set up. And of course, prior to the temple that Solomon built in Jerusalem, the Ark of the Covenant and the dwelling place of God, the tabernacle of God, was a movable tent-like structure, if we could say it that way. But they were to gather at the tabernacle. And of course, after Jerusalem becomes the permanent place of worship, they would gather to Jerusalem. You remember in the Gospels when Jesus is 12 years of age, and his family have left Galilee and are heading to Jerusalem with this apparently family gathering. That was one of those feast days. And by the way, usually a young Jewish boy had to reach age 12 before he would be included in that. So this would be a high moment in his life to be able to now fully participate in the worship and the festivals and the traveling to Jerusalem. So it's a gathering. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Then verse 3, he reminds us of this, which is not yearly, but is weekly. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work in it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. Of course, you've heard of the Sabbath before. It's mentioned as one of the Ten Commandments when God entered into this covenant with Israel, and here it is mentioned again as part of their regular worship. Let's just talk about the characteristics, and let's just kind of slow down if we can and kind of think our way through this and then try to put into place some ideas that can be lessons that we can take away. First of all, it was regular. It was repetitive. It was just part of the routine. Every seventh day, it's a Sabbath. It's work 6 days, a Sabbath. It's just, I started to say like clockwork, but that probably is a good way to say it. It was to be a constant, repetitive reminder that they were regularly to stop what they were doing and let it be as it says there, this shall be a holy convocation. Stop what you're doing, cease with your labors, and come together to worship God. Now, obviously, with the weekly Sabbath, if the people were spread out, not everybody was required to make a journey to the tabernacle or later to the temple, but you were to gather with other like believers, other sons and daughters of Israel. Of course, the synagogue system developed later in Israel's history, where there were permanent structures scattered throughout the villages and towns and so forth of Israel. So they would gather in those places. Probably earlier on, it was more informal. Of course, now we're in this period of the Exodus. They have not entered the land, so the people really are gathered together. So on the Sabbath day, they would all come to the center of their encampment to worship God. So it was regular on the seventh day. Secondly, it's this. It said that it was a day to rest. It says you're to a day of solemn rest. The Ten Commandments tell us that on the Sabbath day there was to be no work. If you think about that, there's some reasons for it. One is, I think God is concerned for our bodies and our health. And he also knows that we cannot just endlessly do work without having some periods of rest. He also gave commandments, and I'm going to get into this tonight because it's a whole other study, but he also gave a system whereby after every so many years, the land was to have a Sabbath and lay and rest to recover and sort of rejuvenate. So he knows that we need that. And you remember it's that, but it's more than that. The fact that we pull away from work, and I've got this on your sheet there, I think part of God's intention was he wanted to just very much enforce a rollback of the distractions. So for this day and this moment, it would be a time that we would reflect and think about God. Now you think about in their day, a lot of your time during the day was just spent laboring and toiling and preparing for the needs of that day, right? You couldn't just go in and open your freezer and pull out a box and slap it in the microwave, and there you have a perfectly balanced meal, if those are perfectly balanced. I assume they are. You had to get up in the morning. If you had to have bread, you had to start with maybe the grain or the meal that had been after the grain had been ground, and you had to do all the stuff that it takes to make bread. I don't want to give you the process because I'll probably get it wrong, and then someone will tell me I got it wrong. But you had to make it for that day. You couldn't keep it for a long period of time. So a large part of every day was just taking care of that day, getting people fed, taking care of the animals, taking care of the crops, taking care of the children, keeping the household going. You know, oftentimes we think, oh, we work so hard. Well, we do. But we have a lot of advantages over them because a lot of things that we need for today are already prepared, or we can prepare in advance, or they can be preserved, or they can be kept, or easily purchased in our economy. So their day was taken up with activity that primarily was responsible for that day or pretty close into that day. And suddenly God just says, stop. Stop your toiling. Stop your working. Stop worrying about getting the food on the table and getting, doesn't mean that people didn't eat that day, but there was a cessation of the normal patterns. And just stop. Get the distractions out of the way. Have you noticed we live in a society that is noisy? There is background noise everywhere we go. And if this is you, this is your business, okay? I just don't understand it. There are some people that I've visited in their homes, and the television or the radio or something is playing not just during the day, but 24/7. I mean, it plays all night. I can't sleep without some noise on. Well, if that's you, I don't understand you, but that's okay. I like to have a little quiet, but we're not used to quiet. And, you know, sometimes when we're doing our thing in here and there's quiet, after a while, you start to feel a little uncomfortable. Shouldn't someone be talking? Shouldn't someone go up and play something on the piano or the organ or turn a little background music on through the set? We don't like silence. God says, I want to just enforce rest. Because you are so distracted by all the stuff in this world, I'm going to make sure that you just have a day that you can just, it's codified, it's programmed in, that we just stop what we're doing, and this is time to think about God. Thirdly, This was a weekly gathering for worship, and that goes back to what we've already said about the meaning of this word, convocation. God's people were to be together. It was not just stop work, take a nap. When the day after the Sabbath rolls about, we just kind of crank it all up again. It's not just about the body. It's just not about our emotions or our well-being. But part of what was to take place on the Sabbath was God's people would come together. I really think, and I don't know if you could find a chapter and verse to prove this, but this is my suspicion. One of the things that Israel got sloppy on was they got sloppy with the Sabbath. They would, well, you know what, if I can make so much money in 6 days a week, what if I work seven? I should be able to make that much more. I could turn out that much more product, or I could gather in that much more food or whatever. And after all, I've worked really hard. Why do I need to gather with other people? I'll just stay at home. I think there was a lax in their coming together. There's something powerful about coming together. It's the reason that the writer of Hebrews writes over in chapter 10, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. Don't stop getting together. You need to be together. You need to be together. And you have come. God bless you for that. Let's just set that as the norm, that we get together. Thirdly, it says in the end of the verse, verse 3, you shall do no work in it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. There are no exceptions. This is not optional. This was for everybody. This wasn't for the elite. This wasn't for the common folks. This was for everybody. This was normative. This was standard procedure, standard operating procedure. It was for everyone. And it was also this. Now, you may not see it as much here, and that's the reason I've got a reference back to, and I'm going to just go back there and read this to you. Back in Exodus chapter 20, this is the giving of the law, what we commonly call the Ten Commandments. He begins in verse 8. We're going to concentrate on what he says in verse 11. In verse 8, he says, remember the Sabbath day. This is Exodus 20, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. That's the everybody, okay? Verse 11, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. It was a hallowed day. It was a holy day. The other characteristic that I want to point out to you is number 5. It is a reminder of the created order, and more importantly than the order of creation, it is a reminder of the God who is the Creator God. Why are weeks 7 days long? You ever thought about that? A year is 365 and a quarter days, except in leap years when we have to kind of get everything back in sync, because that's how long it takes the Earth to make one orbit around the sun. A month is a division of that, and it sort of harkens back to the lunar calendar. On average, it takes the moon 29 and a fraction days to go around the Earth one orbit, so about 30 days, more or less, is a month. Okay, so we understand that. So why is a week 7 days? There is no physical, astronomical, timekeeping reason that a week is 7 days. In fact, there's been moments in history where governments and dictators and stuff such as that have tried to alter the week. And it's interesting, people just sort of naturally go back to a 7-day cycle. It's sort of, programmed into us. The only reason a week is 7 days, there's no reason for it other than that's how God instituted on the first week there ever was. It was His pattern. So the fact that there are 7 days strung across the days of your calendar, and of course you can get these modern calendars that start on Monday. Have you ever seen those, that the calendars start on Monday? I will never buy one. I don't like those. Just don't mess with it. The Lord's Day is first day of the week. Let's just keep that pattern. I like that. That's my preference. It might not work with your work situation, but That's I like it that way. But it's a reminder that it goes back to the first week and the God who is the creator of the first week. And part of the reason for the Sabbath, this pattern that he mentions here in Leviticus 23, verses 1, 2, and particularly verse 3, is to be an opportunity to be a reminder constantly that God is the creator. Without him, we don't exist. And then we could add to that the next one. It is a reminder of the responsibility. If he is the creator, if that is true, and it is, then we, by definition, are responsible to him. We owe him. We are under him. We are subservient to him. We are obligated to honor him and obligated to worship him and obligated to obey him. That's part of the created order. That's one of the reasons why if you tell people in this world, in the popular culture in which we happen to be living here in these days, that you believe in a creator God, why, that is so offensive to some people. It's not that it's any less logical than any other belief system. I think it's eminently more logical and actually requires less faith. But if there is a creator, then I'm responsible to him. I don't want to be responsible to him, so let's just deny that there's a creator by whatever means, by whatever belief system that we can manufacture. And I get to do anything I want. I get to set my own rules. I get to live any way I want with no consequences whatsoever. Or so you would think. But God says to Israel, and he says to us, I want you to live in such a pattern that you're reminded that I made everything. And I'm the creator, and you're responsible to me. And number 7, it's not stated here in the text, but I think it is nonetheless true. There's something about the building of relationships. Yeah, the relationships between God and us, without question. But I think there is a family, community component to this. Everybody stops working all at the same time. We have these gatherings together where we're going to worship God. This is where we would come together. We have to face each other. We can't ignore each other. We can't isolate ourselves from each other. We have to come together. And I think there was to be some instruction from fathers to children. Dad, why do we do this? Why does everyone stop working? Why are we doing this? Well, son, God created everything in 6 days, and the seventh day he rested. He established this pattern for us to remind us that he is God, and he set aside a time because of that pattern for us to gather together, to stop from our labors, and gather together and worship God. Maybe I should take a moment before we get into the lessons, and I won't give you a full treatment tonight, but to at least address, well, why don't we keep the Sabbath? The Sabbath, as you recall, would start from sundown on Friday. Even today, the Jewish rabbis would say that the Sabbath begins sundown at Friday until the stars come out on Saturday. So from sundown till it gets dark on Saturday night. That's the Sabbath period. Well, we worship on the Lord's Day, the first day of the week. It is interesting that of all of the Ten Commandments, nine of them are explicitly and expressly in some fashion or another repeated in the New Testament, with the exception of remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. We looked at a couple weeks ago on Sunday night where the last verse of 1 John 5, where John talks about little children, keep yourselves from idols. You know, have no other gods before you, no graven images. Telling the truth and all those things are mentioned again and exemplified and amplified, with the exception of the Sabbath. Although you do see in Acts the church gathering together, coming together on the first day of the week, and they called it the Lord's Day. It seemed like there was a shift over time away from Sabbath observance to Lord's Day observance, because that was the day our Savior came back to life, to commemorate the resurrection, if you will. And if you think about in terms of that week that God created everything and then he rested, the work was complete. In some sense, the other most significant week in all of human history occurred from the Sunday when Jesus rode a donkey into Jerusalem until later that week he was crucified on a cross, and on the first day of the next week the tomb was evacuated and our Savior rose again. By the way, we're going to be looking at that week starting Sunday, and I hope you invite someone to come with you, and I hope you'll be plugged into that. I'm excited about it. But at the culmination of that week, on the first day of that new week, with Christ raising, basically that work was finished. The work of creation was accomplished, and then there was a day of rest. The work of redemption was accomplished, and then on that first day of a new week, the work was complete. Jesus did not need to die anymore. There was nothing else that needed to be done to secure our salvation. It was complete and full. In some ways, those 2 weeks, that might be a bit of a stretch, but I think they do somehow mirror each other. So the church shifted to that. Some of you will remember, if you're of a certain age, that there were laws in our state and other states that businesses had to be closed on Sundays. They called them blue laws. Remember those? And maybe you think that would be a good thing to do again. I wouldn't hold my breath, but it was somewhat, it was enculturated in us to honor the Lord's Day. It does say something, whether that was good, bad, or indifferent, it does say something about the culture of that day versus the culture of our day, where there's just no real differentiation, for the most part, between the Lord's Day and that. Lessons, number one. We should never be too far away from worship. God saw to it that you couldn't go, if you were living obediently and built into the structure of their society, every 6 days, at the end of 6 days, it was time to worship again. And it was somewhat imposed upon you because everything had to stop and everything had to cease. I think God knew that we needed this extra accountability to just say, get back to worship to me. Come back to me. Come back and spend time together. And I just say that for us. We should never be far from a time of worship. And I would suggest to you that once a week is great, but that is woefully insufficient. We should build worship into our regular routine on a daily basis. Now, maybe we don't do all the things we do for a worship service here, but we should spend some time listening to His voice, a little time away of quietness, a time to express our hearts, to give Him thanks, give Him praise, come before Him giving Him our requests and our hearts and our burdens, and just never be too far away from worship. Don't go too long without a time of worship. We do so to our own detriment. Secondly, we should remain faithful in worship. It was just regular. You could count on it. And we should be regular, and God should count on us showing up for worship. And thirdly, we should remain aware of our relationship. There's just something about this regular, repetitive pattern that was just designed to, like, okay, let me get my head focused back in place here. I've been busy doing all the stuff I've been doing. Okay, there is a God in heaven. He loves me. I'm one of His children. My life is about serving Him. But just to kind of recalibrate everything. Get everything reset. There's so much that you just need to be, every once in a while, you just need to stop and say, Lord, where am I? What am I doing? What's this all about? I've had one of those days. You ever had one of those days? My day started with, I've been trying to nurse a computer along for these last few days. Actually, when I showed up here, there was a computer on the desk in the office I inhabit, and I just decided we're going to just ride this old horse for as many miles as it has in it. No one around here seems to know how old it is, but it's an oldie. And so it's been showing some signs of things going wrong, and I've been trying to do updates and fix and patch and all that. Well, today I reached the conclusion that it has now been officially declared brain dead, okay? So that's how the day started, and so then I was going to make myself a nice ham sandwich for lunch. And I was over in the kitchen, and I know we had these nice squirt bottles of mustard over there. And I thought, well, this would be nice with some mustard. So I go get one of those. It's one of those where you fill it up, and it's got the little pointy thing. And I'm like, and it's coming out really slow. You know what's happening, don't you? Has this happened to you too? I'm, you know, and I've got a nice dress shirt on, a nice, you know, pair of pants, and I'm, and all of a sudden that top popped off and just, boom, mustard all over the kitchen. all over me, my shirt, my pants, my shoes, all over the floor, all over the counter. And you couldn't see my sandwich anymore. It was under a big molten pile of mustard. So that happened. Anyway, I was out doing some, had some things I was shopping for, and after like the sixth store, you know, just like this should have been just like go get it. After the sixth store, I'm like, I remember stopping and asking myself, okay, Lord, what is this all about? Why have you kind of got my schedule off, and why is I would should have been back at the office worrying about my dead computer rather than out here running around in stores? And I was walking out of a store, and someone said, "Hi, Pastor Wagoner." I didn't know where the voice came from, and then I looked, and it was a young man. I did recognize him. His appearance has changed somewhat from last time it changed. He's grown up a little bit. I actually married he and his wife. I officiated their wedding 6-7 years ago, maybe. Hadn't really seen him much since. And he had one of their boys with him, and I said, "Boy, he's really growing up, the things you say." And I'm just going to say, "See you, bye." And he says, hey. He says, "I just want to tell you." He said, "My wife and I are between churches," whatever that means. And he says, "We're just really looking for a church. Could we come visit your church sometime?" And I said, no, I didn't say that. I said, fortunately, I had got the mustard off my shirt, so that was they didn't have that. But actually, I didn't get the mustard off the shirt. I got a new shirt. But, you know, and I carry little cards that have the times of service. Had this conversation. So I was like, okay, Lord, that must have been what this was, some of what this was all about. Because at the beginning of the day, I had no plans to be where I met him at all today, let alone at that time, intersection. So pray for a family out there that needs a church home, for a boy that's probably 11 and a boy that's probably 13 in their family, and for mom and dad, whatever their struggles are. So every once in a while, we just need to stop and think. And that's part of what worship does, what a regular routine. Just stop. You're one of God's children. We're here to serve him and to love him. We just need to recalibrate to him, to stop and remember.